This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Yeheyes Wuhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
If she does the representative there, she's showing support for Israel. And it's kind of like you're normalizing the human rights violations and the crimes against the Palestinian people.
That was Noor Ahmed, spokesperson for the Palestine Solidarity Alliance in South Africa, on the government's decision to withdraw support for Miss South Africa to compete in the Miss Universe pageant in Israel next month. Details coming up. Also, top diplomats for the African Union and the U.S. are in Ethiopia to broker a ceasefire in the country's North Tigray region. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. But first, our top story. Since the start of the coronavirus pandemic, the U.S. has worked closely with Senegal to help combat the virus, including stepped-up efforts to get vaccines to Africa. In his upcoming visit to the country, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is expected to highlight a new effort to help Senegal produce its own vaccines. Anika Hammerschlag reports from Dakar, Senegal.
COVID-19 vaccines didn't become widely available in Senegal until the end of March 2021, months later than many other countries. Since then, Senegal has depended on outside donations to maintain its stock, which on several occasions has been depleted. On Saturday, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken is to end his five-day visit to the continent in Senegal, highlighting America's efforts to help the country manufacture its own vaccines. Blinken is scheduled to visit Dakar's Pasteur Institute, which has recently received tens of millions of dollars from foreign partners to help with vaccine production. The funds include a $3.3 million U.S. contribution. Currently, Africa imports 99% of all its vaccines. David Marchik is the chief operating officer of the U.S. International Development Finance Corporation.
And critically, we want to support these companies so they can make vaccines, not only COVID vaccines, but other vaccines in Africa for Africa, not only help to end the pandemic, but also to build capacity to deal with future health challenges.
In addition to financial support, the U.S. plans to provide technical expertise, Marchik said. The hope is that Senegal will eventually produce vaccines for export to other countries, he said. Since the start of the pandemic, the U.S. has donated nearly 1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine to Senegal and allocated nearly $10 million to help the country fight coronavirus misinformation and aid in vaccine distribution, among other efforts. As of Wednesday, about 8% of Senegal's population had been vaccinated against COVID-19, or more than 1.3 million people, according to the Ministry of Health. In the U.S., about 60% of the population had been vaccinated, or more than 195 million, according to the Johns Hopkins Coronavirus Resource Center. Dr. Ousseynou Badjan is the coordinator of the Expanded Immunization Program with Senegal's Ministry of Health. He says that if Senegal can manage to decentralize vaccine production and produce the vaccine locally, it would not only improve the availability of the vaccines, but facilitate procurement and eliminate transportation costs. Secretary Blinken's visit comes on the heels of the UN climate summit known as COP26, where the U.S. pledged to move away from fossil fuels. While in Senegal, a State Department statement said Blinken was to participate in business-related events, but it did not mention that he would be involved in climate-related discussions. The environment was on the agenda during his visit to Nairobi, the statement said. Annika Hammerschlag for VOA News, Dakar, Senegal.
The top diplomat from the African Union, Nigeria's Olusegun Obasanjo, and his American counterpart, Jeffrey Feltman, are in Ethiopia as part of a ramped-up push to broker a ceasefire in the country's northern Tigray region. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken, according to the French news agency AFP yesterday, renewed Washington's call for a ceasefire in Ethiopia during a visit to Kenya. Kenya is also playing a role in trying to end the conflict. Foreign Minister Rachel Omamo told a joint news conference yesterday that the government believes a ceasefire is possible. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports that the U.S. is warning pilots that planes heading to Ethiopia could be exposed to ground weapons fire or surface-to-air fire as the conflict nears the capital Addis Ababa. However, the country's Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, notes no reports of disruption at Ethiopia's Bole International Airport and no indication of an intent to threaten civil aviation. And regarding the state of emergency just declared a few weeks ago, Ethiopia's Human Rights Commission says thousands, mostly from the Tigray ethnic group, have been arrested. The commission expressed concern about conditions in detention centers that it was unable to access. U.S. Assistant Secretary of State Molly Fee concluded a three-day visit to Sudan, where she met Army Leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and discussed how to restore Sudan's democratic transition. Fee also met with ousted Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok and Mariam al-Mahdi, foreign minister in the administration that Burhan dissolved, to show U.S. support for the civilian-led transitional government. Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and former director of African Affairs at the National Security Council, discussed with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shanawi whether U.S. mediation could lead to a restoration of Sudan's democratic transition.
I don't think so right now. I think that the statements that we're seeing from General Burhan and from the members of the military government that are around him suggest that the pressure from the United States and from outside the country is not sufficient at this time to get them to change their approach to this. They think that they can either wait out pressure from the international community or that the international community will grow tired of this and just choose to move on. So I actually don't feel that they are experiencing a lot of pressure from the United States or others. The U.S. has not discussed any kind of sanctions on the military. There have been no consequences, no costs to the military for this action. Yes, there has been a suspension of assistance, but the military believes that assistance is going to be restored at any moment. And so whether or not Prime Minister Hamdok is returned to office. So I just don't think that the military feels any pressure from this. They're continuing to arrest and detain and kill people in the streets while at the same time, you know, negotiating for their, you know, holding on to power. So I don't understand why we think that this pressure from the United States is anything more than a distraction for the military at this time.
Local resistance committees across the capital, Khartoum, tried to protest on main roads and inside neighborhoods on Wednesday, demanding a full handover to civilian authorities and that coup leaders be tried in court. Do protesters still have the same power they had when their pressure managed to topple autocrat Omar al-Bashir in 2019, when al-Burhan security forces are cracking down on peaceful demonstrations?
Well, I think it's yet to be seen. Clearly that the military is doing what it can right now to weaken this protest movement. As you said, they're cutting off roads to limit the size of the protest movement. They're cut off telecommunications inside the country, which is a new move. Obviously, the internet has been shut off for the better part of the last month. So they are taking steps to try to weaken the ability of the protest movement to organize, to take to the streets. But I don't think that anything that they're doing is weakening the resolve. It might be weakening their ability, but it certainly hasn't weakened their resolve to see the military removed from power, to see the prime minister restored and civilian government in the country restored. I do think, however, though, we have to be careful about how we view the power of the street and what happened in 2019. I'm obviously a big supporter of this democratic movement, but we have to be very clear that they did not take Omar al-Bashir out of power. It was the military that removed Bashir. And we have to remember that they did it to save themselves. They removed Bashir to relieve pressure on themselves, not as a response to the street, not as a response to international pressure. And I think we have to revisit how we view the strength of the democracy movement in Sudan right now. It has not been getting the international support that it needs. The military removed Bashir. That bought them 2 years of a transitional government, but that hasn't been enough. It hasn't satisfied the demands of the people. Now they have no one left to remove. And so I think we are seeing them dig in because they have no way of relieving the pressure right now. And that's a very dangerous situation.
Washington succeeded so far in coaxing a strong consensus from the United Nations Security Council to restore the civilian-led transitional government in Sudan. What's missing, in your opinion, in the U.S. reaction to the coup in Sudan?
Well, what's missing is any real pressure on the military. You know, the military is sitting in power. It enjoys control over the military corporations. It wants to appoint all of the members of a civilian government. It feels no consequences for having violated the Constitution. Constitutional order and holding the prime minister under house arrest for the last 3 weeks. So what's missing from the U.S. reaction is everything. The only thing that Washington has done is really words. And I don't feel like those words have had the impact that we want them to. And so Washington needs to continue to try to put together a coalition of Arab states to condemn this and to make sure that the military knows that outside actors will not be coming to the rescue financially for Sudan. But also, I think the United States has an opportunity here to impose real costs on the military and its allies, the RSF and others, through a series of very targeted sanctions to demonstrate, not just to say that we are condemning the coup, but to demonstrate, to take firm action that we are demonstrating against this coup. That's what's been missing from the U.S. response from the beginning.
That was Cameron Hudson, a senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and former director of African Affairs at the National Security Council, speaking with my colleague, Mohammed Shinawi. Uganda has tightened security in cities and districts at its borders with DRC to keep members of the Allied Democratic Forces, ADF, from infiltrating. This follows terror attacks in the capital, Kampala, which security agencies have linked to the ADF, one of the militant groups based in the eastern DRC. Surveillance also has been stepped up on the shores of Lake Albert, which shares a porous border with the Democratic Republic of Congo. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
On average, about 200 DRC nationals cross to Uganda through unmanned borders to do business, get medical services, or visit relatives, among other reasons. But in the wake of multiple bomb attacks in Uganda, including twin suicide attacks in Kampala on Tuesday, there are suspicions that the terrorists could also be using the porous frontiers. In the Arua border district, vendors in markets shared with DRC nationals have been urged to report suspicious activity. William Dada is a market leader in Arua City.
Currently, we are a little bit scared of the terrorist acts in strategic areas like the market, bars, buses, and so on. But as far as our concern is the markets, which is accommodating so many people, had informed the vendors to beware of these terrorists, to notice peculiar faces because we know each other. I also informed the security organs to give us some techniques as to how we can detect some of those people.
Transporters have also been placed on high alert to ensure they don't carry would-be terrorists and thoroughly check all luggage. Ali Sakelo is the Arua City Resident Commissioner. She told VOA that foot and motorized patrols have been increased around the border city.
We've talked to the bus owners to be very vigilant. If you see any suspicious person around, report to security. So we need to really know who is coming into the city now. Everybody should be vigilant. The intelligence are on the ground to inform us on what is happening. So we are not sleeping. We are alert. We have intelligence at the border, and then we have also UPDF and police patrolling the borders.
There is also heavy security deployment on the waters of Lake Albert, which is sometimes used for crossings to Uganda from DRC. Although the IS has twice claimed responsibility for bomb attacks in Uganda, the government insists the ADF is behind the attacks. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Kenyan authorities say they have recaptured three convicted terrorists who escaped from a maximum security prison in Nairobi Monday as they were on their way to Somalia. More protest action is planned against Miss South Africa attending the Miss Universe pageant in Israel in December. The South African government has withdrawn its support for the trip, but the Miss South Africa body has insisted that Lalila Maswani will be competing. Vicky Stark reports from Cape Town.
Remains to be seen whether 24-year-old Mzwane, who was crowned Miss South Africa in October, will give in to mounting pressure for her to withdraw from the Miss Universe pageant. In a statement, the South African Department of Arts and Culture said atrocities committed by Israel against Palestinians were well documented and the government, as the legitimate representative of the people of South Africa, could not in good conscience associate itself with Israel's actions or the pageant. Sharing this view is Noor Ahmed, who's the spokesperson for the Palestine Solidarity Alliance and its youth league.
If the Miss Universe pageant was being held in any other country but Israel, we would be behind it all the way. But morally, because of the fact that the Miss Universe pageant is being held in apartheid Israel, we can support her attendance there, because if she does the representative there, she's showing support for Israel. And it's kind of like you're normalizing the human rights violations and the crimes against the Palestinian people.
Noor explains why her organization refers to Israel as an apartheid state. Apartheid was an oppressive system in South Africa that divided people along racial lines.
Extreme control of movement, yeah, where Palestinians can move around freely in occupied territories. So, like, that can be directly linked to the PATH laws that we had here in apartheid. Black people were displaced from their land, their homes were taken over, and they were sent to, like, specific bantustans that they were supposed to, like, live in. There's also similar, like, detention without trial, and it's exactly what happened during apartheid South Africa as well, where people who were just arrested, they were killed while they were in prison, and, you know, excuses were they slipped on a bar of soap, you know, and they fell in the shower.
The vice president of the South African Jewish Board of Deputies, Zev Krengel, says he's disappointed in the African National Congress-led government, which he says has been captured by special interest groups and lobbies.
It's from the anti-Israel, anti-Semitic organizations that are trying to isolate Israel to try and delegitimize the Jewish state. We find it quite disgraceful because you try to equate it to apartheid. Now, most people who lived in apartheid, a lot of the ANC members who understand apartheid don't really understand the Israel-Palestinian issue. They've never been there for years. They don't go and find out what's really happening. You know, as I quote a Palestinian in the West Bank, there's a higher GDP per capita than in the whole of South Africa. So if you're a kid about to be born and God says, would you rather be a Palestinian in Ramallah or a black South African in Soweto? It's better to be a Palestinian in Ramallah. You've got more chance. You'll get a better education. You'll get better fed. You'll live longer and you'll have better economic opportunities. So, you know, unfortunately, South Africa really needs to focus on its own issues.
Krengel also echoed the sentiments of the Miss South Africa competition organizers, saying that Lalela Mzwane's dreams shouldn't be dashed by politics. The beauty queen has spoken out against bullying, which she endured as a child, and her desire to succeed despite that.
I mean, she's come through incredible hardship. She's got an unbelievable story, where she's come from and what she's done and what she's achieved. So we were fully behind her as South Africans.
A protest is due to take place outside the Miss South Africa competition headquarters in Johannesburg on Friday. This is Vicky Stark for VOA News in Cape Town.
Four construction workers were killed Wednesday in another deadly building collapse in Nigeria's economic capital, Lagos. The latest disaster comes about 2 weeks after a 21-story building collapsed in Lagos State, killing more than 40 people. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Officials of the Lagos State Fire Service said search teams rescued five workers and that those workers are in stable condition. Officials say an unknown number of people remains trapped under the debris. The building, a one-story structure in the Magbon area on the outskirts of Lagos, caved in Wednesday afternoon. Earlier this month, a 21-story building collapsed in the Ikoyi area of Lagos State, killing at least 42 people and raising concerns among both citizens and authorities. Experts attribute the frequent collapses seen in Nigeria to substandard building materials and poor monitoring by authorities. Festus Adebayo is the founder of the Housing Development Advocacy Network.
What is government doing to have prevented this occurrence? We can't continue to be wasting lives. Every professional body has a regulatory body. We have Nigeria Architects, Institute of Architects. We have Council of Registered Builders of Nigeria. To what extent are those regulatory bodies deliver on their mandate?
After the Ikoyi building collapse, Lagos State authorities set up an independent team to investigate the incident. They also declared 3 days of mourning in the state for victims, who included the owner of the real estate company that was developing the site. Timothy Obiezu for VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suwuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dumbolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.